You dance.
Yeah.
He'll sing, and I'll do percussion.
I love it, yeah. I don't think you can take a picture of us. I think it's
no,
just the
no, I thought this was us.
Just
dude.
The microphone. We don't even need to post.
That's Jason. Angela? Oh, okay. Great. Thanks, guys. This film is a long time in coming. Jonathan has said it took him 11 years and that it's really kind of evolved from just kind of an adaptation from the cartoon series to something completely different and completely modern. So can you talk a little about bringing this, kind of 80s icon and contemporizing it and making it its own unique?
Well, you should do that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll sort of start from 11 years ago, and then I'll kick it over to Jason. So John Chu has a long-standing relationship with Hasbro, and many, many years ago was sitting with Brian Goldner, who is the chairman and CEO of the company and is a producer on the film, talking about doing a number of things. And one of the things that came up in the context of our working with John on G.I. Joe was how much he loved Gem and the Holograms. And they kept in touch and talked a lot about it. And then fast forward, I don't know, probably 5, 6, 7 years, Jason approached us about doing something with Gem and the Holograms as well. And I think you got together with John as well at one point, and he raised his love of Gem with you, and it was just sort of meant to be. So.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. John, I was having a general meeting with John talking about the many benefits of low-budget filmmaking, and I think that sparked him thinking, oh, maybe this is another way to approach Hasbro with it, is like instead of imagining it as a $30 million movie, which we've done with a lot of our movies, like Ouija was 110 to 5. So he was like, maybe we could look at this differently if we looked at it as a low-budget movie. So he pitched it to us, and then we reapproached Hasbro with the idea of doing it as a low budget movie.
And the contemporary, making it contemporary with all the social media aspects.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. If you look back at the themes from the 80s, they really resonate today. It's still about female empowerment. It's about being authentic. It's about being true to yourself. Fast forward 30 plus years, it still resonates. I mean, we live in, the era of female empowerment, so it just felt perfect. And then layer on the great ideas that, John and Jason and Scooter had about social media and about music, and it just felt very right to do it now.
But it was John's idea to set it in the present day.
Scared the crap out of me.
Jason, in my interview with you previously, I asked if there's going to be a jump scares in Gem, and he said, no, there's going to be jump scares in Gem.
Now we changed it. We put a few in.
Exactly. So my question is, why did General House, like Blumhouse, feel strongly to be involved in this project?
Well, people ask, like, how we're going to expand, like, how are you going to make higher budget movies? And I'm not particularly interested in that, but I am interested in what else you can do with low budgets. Like, can you take IP, even if it's not scary, and make what would typically be a $30 million studio movie and use a low budget? So that's why it's a very businessy answer to your question, but that's why I think that it's fun to experiment with what else you can do with low budget filmmaking, which is essentially low budget independently produced movies that studios release. But it's not, it's not going to take us away from our core, which is scary stuff, which is what hopefully we'll always do.
Thank you.
Awesome. I'm just curious your thoughts on the updating of the music, because, in the 80s, you look at Gem and the Holograms, and they're very glam rock meets pop. How do you bring that into the modern world?
My turn. Well, first you got to understand kind of the project and how it took place. They told you how John, you went with Hasbro, went with Jason, and then John told Jason that I should be involved to kind of help with the music. Jason thought, oh, that's a good idea because he knows music. The real reason John was doing that is because he expected me to create a miracle. because
that's not really fair. John said, and in a lot of ways, John said, I can't do the movie without Scooter because the movie is so dependent on music.
But he gave me 2 weeks.
He gave me 2 weeks, and we know
that was really a week more than you needed.
Yeah, well, that's the miracle part. Like, making music is fun and it's a great process, But John had another film he had to go to, so he told us, look, this is when I need to shoot. So we had to cast. We had 3 weeks. We had to cast, and then we had to get the girls in the studio, and I had to come up with 6 or 7 original songs in 2 weeks. So we literally took our entire A&R staff in the office and said, no one for this week, focus on any other project than Jem, and let's go out to all our writers, go out to all our friends, even guys we don't represent, and let's pull in the best songs for this script. You guys have all seen the movie at this point, so the last one was the one Under the Bridge where Ryan was singing. That was the last record that came in because we were having a hard time. We had another record, but it wasn't making as much sense. And that record was actually a record that Justin Bieber had actually sang 3 years ago and worked on, and we had that demo. And we thought, maybe Ryan can do this, and that kind of came in. But to answer your question as far as kind of the glam rock, I think John came with an incredible script with a lot of heart. And we had to find songs that applied to the script first. And then we had to find songs that gave to that girl power, that talked about, you know, the struggle of family and the struggle of the sisters, you know, and that was our first mission. And we had to do it in 2 weeks. But to the credit, I'd love to say it was us, but it was really the writers that we were friends with, the writers we represent, they really stepped up. We gave them all little snippets of the script each and allowed them to see where it would fit in the movie. And we just got incredible songs very, very quickly because people were inspired. And the great part is a lot of the writers were fans of the show from years back. So they were able to kind of contextualize where they wanted to go with it. And what I'm excited about is, you know, the next time we get to make another one, maybe I'll get a little more time and we can make even more songs.
Two and a half weeks.
But it was really a pleasure. And I actually learned a lot from these guys on this side of the business and had a lot of fun. And what Aubrey didn't tell you is John called me and said, okay, remember the girl, you know, Aubrey we met, she got the part. You should probably congratulate her. And I said, great. Okay, cool. So I FaceTimed Aubrey. What he didn't tell me was congratulate her tomorrow after I tell her. So I FaceTimed with Aubrey, and she's like, hey, Scooter, what's going on? And I said, hey, just want to say congratulations. Way to go. I'm so happy for you. And she goes, happy about what? And I went, she goes, oh, my God, I got the part. I got the part. And she starts getting really excited. And I go, stop. Just when John calls you, you have to be a really good actress. And to her credit, she didn't tell John until 2 weeks later after she pretended she was excited all over again. So I screwed up a couple times through the process.
We all know John's passion for this, like we've said. It's gone back over a decade. For you guys, what makes him such a special filmmaker that was right for this project from what you guys said?
Well, for me, what did it more than anything else besides the fact that the normal answer is like I loved his movies. I think he's really talented. It's really rare. He wrote the script on spec, and he wrote the script before anyone knew. It's not that he wasn't paid to write the script, which he wasn't, but beyond that, he wrote a script about an intellectual property that he didn't control, which is a really risky thing to do. And I just, as a you know, fellow human being, have a tremendous amount of respect for that. I've always said that as it relates to this, of someone who's that passionate about something, of like, believe me, it's going to be good, and then, okay, I'm going to show you how good it can be. To me, that speaks volumes. When he did that, I don't think if there was anyone else who ever wanted to direct Gem and the Holograms, we would not have produced that movie. You know, it's just such a cool thing to do. He's a busy guy. He's got a lot to do, and to spend 2 or 3 months writing something that really the chances were wouldn't get done, was awesome.
Go ahead. I was just gonna say I told the story earlier with Jason about my experience of John as a filmmaker, and I had to do a phone call with him years back when we made Never Say Never, and I wasn't gonna hire him. Because I had this vision for the movie of what exactly we wanted to do. And I was looking for, I was interviewing a lot of guys who were known for documentary style. And John was at the time known for Step Up. And I got on the phone with him and I said, listen, we have a lot of mutual friends. I'm just going to tell you this before we start. There's a high likelihood that you're not getting this. So I just don't want to have an awkward position. And he goes, well, why? And I said, well, look, they're having you do it because of you're the dance guy, and they think this is a concert film. That's not what I'm trying to make. I'm not trying to make a concert film. I'm trying to tell a story. And to John's credit, he said to me, you know, it's funny you say that. I'm not the dance guy. I'm just a filmmaker who was given dance, and I did it to the best of my ability. And now I'm known as a dance guy, and I make movies, and I tell stories, and that's what I want to do. And I said, you know what? I need to shut up and listen. And at the end of that phone call, I said, we're making this movie together. And he's become one of my best. He introduced me to my wife, so I love the guy. But I will tell you, you know, if anyone's ever seen a student film that Steven Spielberg discovered him on and see his entire body of work, John's a very young guy, and I think he's going to be around a long time making a lot of really great movies. And it also, beyond the fact that he's so talented, if you get to spend any time with him one-on-one, he's one of the best people you'll ever meet. And I think that's why everyone who works with him has such a positive experience.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think what Jason and Scooter said resonated with us, too. I mean, we always knew that John loved Jem because we'd been talking to him about it for years. When we read what he wrote, his passion just popped off the page in such an unusual way that we knew that this was the guy to reimagine this brand for us. And he is just a super nice, genuine guy who only wants to succeed. And it's about the art with him, and he's just incredibly passionate. And it's great to work with writers, directors who have that level of passion and connection to your brands.
Two weeks.
Phenomenal job, too.
I would say we never really felt at all worried, panicked, concerned, because, you know, this is like the dream team. You know, add John to the mix, Brian Goldner to the mix. We had phenomenal representation. I mean, everybody wanted to make a phenomenal film and do it in what was a very short period of time all the way around, from production to putting the music together. But we never felt like this wasn't going to be anything but successful because of everybody's commitment and passion to it.
We were panicked.
He hit it really well.
Definitely the biggest challenge for us was the scope of the movie was massive for our little system, and it really goes back to John again. There's really like two ways you can attack that as a director, and the directors we work with kind of fall into one or two categories, which are like self-starter, we're going to figure this out, or the opposite. When it's the opposite, it doesn't work as well. And that was a great thing about John, is that I had serious doubts that we were going to be able to do the movie in the budget that we had delivered. But
that's not what you told me. That's not what you told me.
I know.
All that comfort I felt.
I lied. It was all a lie.
Yeah. Wow.
But it was the reason that we were able to do it was because of the director.
A couple of songs are still stuck in my head, so thank you for that. Yeah, 2 weeks was very impressive. But at any point in those 2 weeks, did you sit there and go, you know what? Let's just take some of the original songs from the series and then rearrange them for a more updated style?
Well, yeah, I wanted the theme song. it was complicated just because of, look, I wish that we could just make art for art all the time, but there is a business. And when it comes down to the business, there's publishing, there's things that kind of get in the way that make it harder to use kind of that original music. And that's why it was a challenge also, because I had to be respectful of the fact that this show had a huge loyal fan base that knew that music. You know, I really wanted the theme song. I was going to have like Diplo redo the theme song. Like, I was trying to figure out really cool ways, but because of the business of it, it was a little bit harder. I will tell you that John did do things within the film to show respect to that fan base. You know, when that mic, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, when the woman hands the mic to Jem as she's walking to the stage, that's the original voice of Jem. Yeah, I would have loved to. Absolutely would have loved to. But unfortunately, this time around, didn't get a chance. But maybe the next time, we'll have a little more time. We can figure all that out.
Last question. So in terms of all the social media and then interacting with live audiences after this, given now that I learned that there's such a short were you nervous about doing that, like reaching out to people and the public to actually be a big part of this? Because they were explaining that concert scenario.
Yeah, we had a tweet. Yeah, he had John call me, and he's like, can you get tweets up? you know, look, I think we'll keep saying it over and over again. I think it's a testament to John Chu that when anyone else, you're just like, hell no. But with John, you know it's from such a real place, and you know that whatever he's going to do, you know, you can trust him. I mean, I'm really happy it's not in the movie, but John called me and he goes, hey, I need a real music executive to get into a fight with Erica. And I said, okay, who are you looking for? He goes, so I need you to come down tonight at 11 o'clock. And I've never acted in my entire life. And I said, I'm not going to do that. And he got me to come down there. And he said, we're going to shoot your shot at 12 o'clock. So at 6 a.m., when I was still there and hadn't shot anything, and I'm exhausted, John's like, we're almost there. We're running a little bit behind. I'm like, John, it's like 6 hours. And he's like, just wait. And then I walked in and probably did the worst acting job ever with, you know, an Oscar nominee. and then afterwards, after all that, you just do whatever John says. And then, you know, I got a cool Instagram out of it. And thank God he didn't put it in the movie.
Thank you. Great. Thank you guys very much.